Prime Matters presents this three-part series on the interior life with Monsignor Tom Richter of the Diocese of Bismarck. Prime Matters is a groundbreaking project of educational outreach of the University of Mary, awakening the Catholic imaginative vision. Episode 2, Spiritual Bachelorhood.
A reading from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 10. As he was setting out on a journey, a man ran up, knelt down before him, and asked him, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus answered him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good but God alone. You know the commandments: you shall not kill, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not defraud, honor your father and your mother." He replied and said to him, "Teacher, all of these I have observed from my youth." Jesus, looking at him, loved him and said to him, "You are lacking in one thing. Go sell what you have and give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven. Then come, follow me." At that statement, his face fell, and he went away sad, for he had many possessions. The Gospel of the Lord. So I want to give an overview and then place this talk within the context of last night's and the big picture. So Jean Corbin wrote the fourth book of the Catechism of the Catholic Church on prayer. Amazing. It's amazing. If you haven't read the fourth book of the Catechism, read it. He says this: the most fruitful activity of the human person is to receive God. The greatest thing you can do for the whole wide world is receive God. Isn't that a delightful thought? This is the heart of Mary, right? Mary gives the world God because she first can receive him. If she can't receive, she has nothing to give. Okay, so the most fruitful activity of the human person is to receive God. This is what the enemy is trying to prevent in you. Trying to prevent us from being able to know how to receive God, and then he flows out of us. And this is precisely what faith does. The first thing faith does is receives. God is a giver. God is love. God is self-giving. He's giving himself. What does faith do? Receives him. And then he makes me good. And I get filled with love, which makes me go out of myself and get out of my weird head and actually serve, rejoice, worship, praise, forgive. So God is a giver. God is love. He's self-giving, and faith receives. So this is what the enemy is really trying to prevent it. Listen, students. The enemy isn't trying to keep you from being religious. In fact, the enemy loves religious people who don't know how to receive God. They're some of his greatest helpers. Religious people killed Jesus. You don't get to heaven by being religious. You get to heaven by receiving God. Now, hopefully you can do both. But don't think just because you're religious, you're receiving God. So receiving God is the key here. Actively receiving God, this is what faith does. And last night I wanted to show that the first thing faith does to receive God is to actually see the true God. The real one. And not the one I made up in my head. It's some divine Santa Claus. So faith sees the true God who is pure act, who is love, giving himself to me and laboring for my greatest good in every moment, all the time. And so I stand in this posture of receptivity. And so this is what we come to now. Tonight, I want to talk about another thing faith does to receive. So faith is constantly trying to push back in our hearts this impulse to paganism, trying to get God to be good, trying to get God to act. Constantly pushing against that. And then the other thing which I want to focus on tonight, faith does this. You can't open the gospel and read more than two pages without seeing this is what faith does. Faith acknowledges a need and brings it to Jesus. Did you hear that? You don't need a PhD to actually understand that. Faith acknowledges a need and brings it to Jesus. Faith acknowledges and relates. This is what faith does. It acknowledges and relates the need of the heart. If you have deep faith, that's what faith does. Sees the God who is always giving, who is the Son, who's Niagara Falls, pouring himself out to me in my need. And so to receive, I acknowledge my need, bring it to him, and I receive. You might ask, Monsignor, how do you know if you're receiving? If you're acknowledging your need and bringing it to him, you're receiving because God is love who gives himself to you where you're in need. Don't ask any more questions. If you're acknowledging your need and bringing it to him, you're receiving. What faith does, right? Listen to Jesus, Matthew 11:25. Come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest. Bring your need, and you receive, because I am love, and I'm giving myself to you where you're in need. Okay? So in order to do this, this is what I want to get after now. So that the enemy is trying to constantly get us to relate to a false God. And now the other thing is to get us not to relate. Not to relate. So I taught a semester course on this out at Dickinson Trinity to seniors in high school. And I tried to get them to think of original sin as self-made aloneness in one's heart around one's need. What is original sin? It's a self-made aloneness in one's heart around one's need. Adam, after he sinned, is all alone, hiding in his need. And so this is what he is after. That we don't bring our need and open it up to God, but we just sit and think about it and dwell on it and try to figure ourselves out and fix ourselves. Right? Adam is sitting there saying, oh my gosh, I just destroyed the entire universe. How am I going to fix that? Growing up at home, I had 9 brothers. And so when you have 9 brothers, right, you skin some knees and some elbows and get some bruises. No matter how good I treated them, they weren't always the same back to me. And so, you start crying. Do you remember, students, do you remember any of those times where you cried so much you lost your breath? Yeah. So I would run to mom. I'd run to mom crying at that depth where I'd lose my breath. And when I would get to her, she would grab me by the cheeks and then rub her hands through my thick, beautiful hair. Yes. I had hair for about 12 years. And she would calm me down. And when she, after I got calm, she would say, "Tom, tell me where it hurts." This is what faith does. With the God who is love. That which is against faith wants a college student to sit in anxiety around these things and not relate them. So, in order to do this, we must kick the spiritual bachelor out of the basement, which is what I'm talking about as far as the spiritual bachelor in the basement. We must overcome this incredibly pervasive condition in the human heart today, and perhaps 'twas always thus, but incredibly pervasive today, the capital sin of sloth, or sloth, however you want to say it. This, believe it or not, is what I want to talk about tonight. Sloth, and the proper understanding of it. And if I do my job, if you go to confession tonight, you're going to confess you're a pagan and you struggle with sloth, okay? So, you guys, it wasn't so long ago, right, Father? You had Dr. Peter Kreeft out here, not so long ago. Dr. Peter Kreeft, in his book, Back to Virtue, if you haven't read his book, Back to Virtue, you got to pick it up. Forget the first half, it's kind of too philosophical. Go to the second half, read the second half. It's some of the finest pages you'll ever read in your life. And he takes the Beatitudes as remedies for the capital sins. And he says this, in the chapter on sloth, he says these amazing words. "Nothing so distinguishes modern society from all previous societies as its sloth." That's an amazing statement. He thinks what makes us most unique, modern society, from others, is we are so much more slothful. So Dr. Kreeft thinks it's incredibly common. I also think it's incredibly misunderstood. Many of you are sitting there in your pew right now thinking Monsignor's going to give a boring talk on laziness. And he's going to tell us we got to stop being lazy. To understand sloth as laziness is to understand it enough to get it all wrong. Sloth is way more interesting than that. It's a special laziness. That was meant to be funny. It's a special laziness. St. Thomas Aquinas says, sloth is sorrow. It's a sadness inside of you around spiritual goods. Sloth is a sadness that comes inside of you when you're confronted with, I'm supposed to find my joy, my fulfillment in my relationship with God. Listen, the rich young man in the gospel I just read, he went away sad. That was sloth. Inside of him was Jesus, the living God, could never replace possessions. I'm supposed to, like, be able to find what possessions bring me in Jesus? That makes me sad. We all experience it. Huh? After I've played my 10th game of Pinochle on my phone, and the thought comes to me, you know, Monsignor, you're a priest. You could actually pray an extra 30 minutes. And there's a, I have to give up Pinochle to pray? Oh. That sloth. In you is sloth. That's a Hebrew word. That means some you got to really get rid of. This is what it's about. Sloth, this thing inside of us that makes us sad, is coming from a lie that came into the heart, because of original sin, and it needs to be healed by experiencing the true God. And the more we experience him, it goes away. But to the degree we don't, there's a lie in the heart that says this: God isn't enjoyable. Prayer is boring. Mass is boring. Being good's boring. Being holy's boring. Praying's boring. So I find my joy elsewhere. I mean, I still have to put up with God because I don't want to go to hell. But as far as bringing my heart to God for joy is something I don't do. Sloth doesn't do. Which is now getting us to the real meaning of sloth. Everyone, the fuller meaning of sloth, which is relational laziness, a spiritual bachelor. I don't relate my heart to God. I don't open it up to God. I don't go to him for joy. I don't bring it. I sit and think about myself and this need alone. I don't want the work of having to relate. Pinochle is giving me enough of a buzz. So this is what we need to overcome. Now, St. Thomas says this, students, St. Thomas Aquinas, this is where it gets incredibly insightful. St. Thomas Aquinas says this: if we follow that sadness, the sadness that's in the rich young man, what does the rich young man do? He doesn't relate to Jesus. He walks away. All he has to do is say, Jesus, I don't think you can fulfill what these possessions do. You got to prove that wrong. Show me that you're more enjoyable than they are. So if we follow this sadness, St. Thomas Aquinas says, if we follow this sadness, we then, in fact, avoid what makes us sad. Right? And so we never commit to a real deep, committed prayer life, because that's not where we find our joy. And we seek it elsewhere. And this is just mind-boggling. And so the most common face of sloth is busyness. Too busy to pray, right, students? Let me tell you, if you're finding joy in prayer, you're not too busy to pray. Wherever you're finding joy, you're never too busy for that place. Too busy. And so what happens, right? Instead of finding our joy in spiritual goods, we now find them in our work, etc. You married people probably can identify with this, right? The same thing happens in a relationship, right? In a marriage. If a marriage becomes difficult, huh? And they had these great hopes of finding their joy in this, and now it gets hard, and the home life is hard, and being at home is hard, and it's not joyful, and it takes a lot of work. How, what can be a result? They just stay at work. They just work more. They get busy. You probably experience this when you try to pray, right? I have this same experience. I go into my chapel every morning, pray a holy hour from 5:45 to 6:45. And if I'm having a hard time entering into prayer and I'm distracted and the chair doesn't sit right and my mind's wandering and I just can't enter into a nice prayer, the first thing that happens is I need to refill the holy water bottle. I need to replace the candle. I need to water the plants. And they're plastic plants. They're fake. Now you run. And so it's interesting, right? What does a slothful society do? Wants to get rid of Sunday rest. What does that get you? When we can be making money, getting stuff done, doing business, making things happen. We're supposed to find our joy resting with God. What does a slothful society look like? Advent becomes a time that's busier and busier and busier and busier instead of entering into the silence and the simplicity of Bethlehem. I think Peter Kreeft is right. It's common. Because when we find our joy in God, it orders everything. The second thing he says is if we follow this sadness, huh? Instead of finding our joys and our fulfillment in spiritual goods, we now look for them in bodily pleasures. In bodily pleasures. So good people, I think this is good news. As kind of uncomfortable as it is, I think it's good news. The whole struggle with all the stuff on the computer today, I think it's much more about sloth than lust. It's about the heart not knowing how to go and receive love from God. Sloth is the root, lust is the fruit. And so the remedy isn't to get focused on the fruit. The remedy is about getting focused on overcoming the root. And that is not living alone, but relating, bringing my need to God. It's a very unique thing, right? So the other capital sins are inordinate desires, right? So what is pride? Inordinate self-love. Self-love is good. Inordinate self-love is pride. What's gluttony? Inordinate desire for the pleasure of food and drink. Right? These other sins are inordinate desires, but what does sloth do? Sloth shrivels the desire for God, which then clears the way for the others. In other words, if the seven capital sins played basketball, sloth would be a point guard. It assists all the others. So one needs to address that. Isn't that a lot easier to admit? I don't relate to God enough. I'm slothful. Where do we see this? I would like to think we're seeing this on display. If you go to Luke 15, on the parable of the prodigal son, you have the younger son, you have the elder son, right? They are the two faces of the two consequences of sloth. In fact, these two brothers are much more alike than either one of them would want to admit. Think about the younger son, right? The younger son ends up sleeping with pigs, wishing he could eat what the pigs eat. Like, how did he get there? He started out what? Wanting friendship. What's wrong with that? Wanting freedom. What's wrong with that? Wanting adventure. What's wrong with that? Nothing wrong with any of them. What was his problem? He wouldn't find it in a relationship with the Father. He wouldn't bring his need to the Father. Sloth is the root of all the other. And so he sought it in bodily pleasures. What's the elder son? He didn't know how to enter into finding his joy in a relationship with the Father. So what did he do? Got busy. Worked. I find it fascinating. It's the root of so much, and no one is confessing it. A priest should never say confession and pound a pulpit at the same time. That was a bad, bad message. I don't think we're aware of it. And in fact, we're harder on ourselves because of it. So what do I offer for a remedy for us to start living differently? So sloth is what makes stuff so burdensome and sad and hard and difficult and unenjoyable. Living alone in one's burden. And then one has to seek consolation. Living alone because I'm not acknowledging and relating. As you know, I grew up 12 miles out past here on a dairy farm. And so I milk cows. I milk cows just about every day from like second grade to middle of high school or whatever. So I milked a lot of cows. I never liked ever milking cows. I would have rather done just about anything than milked cows. Except for this is a fascinating thing, everyone. Listen to this. When my buddy, Toby Schweitzer, would come out to the farm and milk cows with me, I enjoyed milking cows. Being with this one I enjoyed made the worst thing enjoyable. This is what sloth prevents. What burdens our lives aren't our responsibilities and our daily duties. What burdens them is being alone in them. And so let me end with giving you a little thing to help show us the progression of moving more and more away from sloth. So we want to move away from, you're probably too young for this. Father Bauch said, Monsignor, you're dating yourself. These people are too young for this. But I trust some of you remember WWJD. Right? Good. Whew. Okay. Okay. I trust your parents told you about that or something. Okay? WWJD. I hope not too many of you are wearing that bracelet right now, because I'm going to insult you in a minute if you are. So WWJD means, right, what would Jesus do? This is how a slothful Christian relates to Jesus. I think about what would Jesus do. I don't relate to him. This is what the devil does all day. What would Jesus do? That's not Christianity. In fact, it's all based on unchristian conditions. What would Jesus do if, in fact, he was real? Imagine that. What would Jesus do if he is actually here? What would Jesus do if he's actually doing something? What would Jesus do? That's how we relate to Abraham Lincoln. Do you see how it takes away the relating that God is real? So we want to move away from WWJD. Move toward a good step would be WIJD. But still, don't be wearing a bracelet with WIJD. That's still not good enough. WIJD is, what is Jesus doing? But that's still not the Christian life. What is Jesus doing? He's real. I know Jesus is real. I know he's doing something. He's pure act. He's love. What is he doing? But that's still not how the heart that is Christian relates to him. Right, the Christian heart that has overcome sloth moves from WWJD to J Wade. JWAYD. Make those bracelets and sell them by the thousands, and God will bless you. The heart that has faith, that has met God, that knows he's real, that knows he's pure act, that he's love, that he's right here doing whatever and ever, and my greatest good, relates this way. Jesus, what are you doing? The difference between what would Jesus do to Jesus, what are you doing, is a universe apart. This is where we want to go. And this is where that young man went bad. It was not wrong for him to have inside of him, I'm afraid to give this up for you, Jesus. I'm afraid I won't be happy. What was wrong is he didn't stay and relate that to Jesus. Bring it to him. And so, good students, let's do our best to let our faith simply acknowledge, relate. What do I mean? You want more peace. You bring that to Jesus. You want more hope? You bring that to Jesus. You want to worry less? You bring that to Jesus. You want to experience His close? Bring that to Jesus. Acknowledge and relate.